Our final case for this morning is United States v. David Pirotti.
May it please the Court. There are two issues in this appeal.
How do you pronounce your last name, Mr.?
Bugney, Your Honor.
Bugney, okay.
Thank you. There are two issues in this appeal. First, whether the ostrich instruction was warranted, and second, whether it was harmless error. Concerning the first, this Court has instructed many times that the ostrich instruction is appropriate when a person cuts off their natural curiosity through an act of the will.
Right, so here's my, I want to get right to the heart of it. First of all, the pattern instruction was the one that was given, which does say you may not find that the defendant acted knowingly if he was merely mistaken or careless in not discovering the truth, or if he failed to make an effort to discover the truth. So many of the arguments in your brief really go to that he failed, he didn't make enough of an effort, he was asking the wrong people, whatever. What I want to know is, from the perspective that we have to take, why couldn't a rational jury have thought to itself, gee, when he's sitting there in the Walmart filling out the form and it tells him to go back and review, and he's first clicked yes to question 11-I, and he goes back and reviews and he changes it to a no. I totally recognize that there may be a couple of explanations for that, but why is it irrational for the jury to think that he in fact deliberately avoided the truth on that point? He just didn't want to look into it too much. He had enough doubt about it to say yes at first. And you know, I think it's about standard of review. So I'd like to hear, not just could a jury have found in your client's favor, surely yes, but did it have to?
No. No, clearly, we haven't appealed to Rule 29.
I know you haven't, but he also, you're appealing the ostrich instruction, and it was my sense that he is arguing in part that although he did something wrong, that he's denying that the statement was false, which is a situation for an ostrich instruction.
He's denying that he knew it was false. Not that it was
false.
That's
what I mean. He's denying that he knew that answering no to question 11-I was false. And I want to know why the jury didn't have the right questions in front of it in this instruction, why this isn't the situation where you give an ostrich instruction.
It's not the right situation where you give the instruction because he hasn't willfully cut off his curiosity. He hasn't done.
Do we know that? That's the answer to the question. I want to know why, on this record, a rational jury couldn't have found that he's denying knowledge that the statement was false. Seems to me he is denying knowledge that saying no to question 11-I is false. And could a jury find the strong suspicion that it was false and deliberate avoidance of the truth, you know, by not looking at the rest of the definition on the form? I don't care about lawyers and all of that. That seems to me entirely off to one side.
I'll answer. It's a two-part answer. One, it is a standard review, and this court has to be convinced beyond a reasonable doubt that a rational jury still would. And that's much different than saying, hey, could a rational jury, you know, still find him guilty? Clearly.
What do we have to find beyond a reasonable doubt?
That a jury still would have convicted without this instruction, regardless of the error.
Not only if we think the instruction's wrong.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm trying to get you to address why the instruction's wrong when he denies knowledge that his statement is false and that a rational jury could think, on the basis of this record, that he deliberately avoided the truth.
You'd have to have.
And you're inviting the jury to say, but maybe that wasn't it. Maybe he was just mistaken or careless or negligent or, you know, whatever.
You would have to say that this is something that you turn your blind eye to. This goes to everything in yourself would say, hey, man, go read the instructions.
Right. And the jury knows he's already answered yes to question 11-I. The computer tells him, you know, kind of a funny instruction. But anyway, the computer says, go back and review everything. And he changes the yes to a no.
He does. And whether or not at that moment, going to the instructions is something that you'd say,
couldn't a rational jury think that he has zeroed in on this domestic abuse question and he is just going to say no and deliberately avoid finding out whether it's right or wrong?
Well, no, a rational jury couldn't based upon the record of his first answer is yes. He's volunteering the first fact. He says, yes, I think that is right. And then when the computer kicks it back and says, go review your answers, sir, that's the only one that he has a guess to. He only says, well, that was the only one I had a strong suspicion. I could be wrong.
But the jury answers no. That's your interpretation. And, you know, look, maybe he was confused. I don't know. But the jury rejected the merely mistaken or careless option. It would have had to acquit if it had found that. And so, you know, he's asked about a misdemeanor of domestic violence. First he says yes, then he goes back and he just checks no without looking further to see which is right.
And that's not looking far enough. He's not putting his head in the sand. He's not trying to avoid this knowledge.
That's what you argued to the jury, I'm sure. But did the jury have to buy that?
No, the jury didn't have to buy it.
So it could have found that he had a strong suspicion that no was the wrong answer, but he really didn't want to push it.
Well, he could have also convicted on many other bases. It could have said, just based upon your testimony, we think you're a liar, Mr. Prati. It wouldn't be focused only upon the instructions.
But you're not making an argument about any of the rest of that. You're just making an argument about this.
Well, that partly because based upon the standard review, it's not to look into how else could the jury have convicted Mr. Prati. It's whether or not we're concerned or convinced beyond a reasonable doubt that, hey, this jury with this instruction or without this instruction still would have convicted. Is it just like a, you know?
Well, you're jumping. If there's enough of a predicate to give the instruction, yeah, then we just give the instruction. If there's not enough of a predicate to give the instruction, you're quite right. It's not a Rule 29 standard. Is it inevitable he would have been convicted? But I see that as step two of our inquiry.
Then as to step one, the question isn't, you know, look, did he not look far enough? Could a jury say that he tried to shield himself from the truth?
Right.
And if he's not, the truth isn't there. If it's not, you know, why am I getting paid $5,000 to walk across the street with this bag? If it's not like Gioviante, I'm mispronouncing it, but the gambling house and all these things are red flags are rising up. Well, that's when we say, hey, you've gone beyond mere negligence.
I'd like to focus on the specific evidentiary basis that was offered by the government and accepted by the district court as the predicate for giving this ostrich instruction, to try to focus your argument
sure.
a little bit, which
yeah.
is, I think, what Chief Judge Wood has been trying to do as yeah. well. There has to be something more than a mere denial that he knew this
yes.
was false. That's not enough. There has to be an evidentiary basis. As I understand it, the evidentiary basis was that when the computer kicked back his answer or his application, he changed his answer without actually going to click on the links that would have provided a definition for a misdemeanor crime of domestic violence, which would have clarified the situation for him. And that was one evidentiary data point that this instruction rested on. But then there was more. There was the issue of whether he should have gone to consult a lawyer and whether he should have gone to the judge and all the rest of it. And maybe you could address those specific items of evidence and whether they were properly in the calculus or not.
I don't believe that going to a lawyer or going to a judge was properly within that.
Okay, so take those out.
Got
Let's
it.
Say we agree with you on that stuff is off the table, improperly relied upon.
Good.
That's not evidence of willful avoidance or deliberate avoidance.
Sure.
What about just his activities with respect to filling out the computer application?
As far as the instruction goes, he never clicked on the instruction link, so he never sees that. And even if he had, it wouldn't be clear at that moment as he's reading it that the answer really is no. But the answer really is yes. That's probably the correct answer. So as he clicks on it, or if he were to click on it, so there's no evidentiary basis that he clicked on it. Did he ever saw these instructions?
Well, right. Is that enough for deliberate avoidance?
No.
Why not?
Because there has to be something more. There has to be something that you weren't merely negligent, that there was facts out
there. But
there
is more, because the answer is yes first. His gut reaction is first that the correct answer is yes. And for all we know, if he had hit submit and it had printed out the form, he would have signed the form. He never would have changed it. But in fact, it's the computer that kicks it back and says, take another look. And it doesn't focus him on anything. Just take another look. And the only thing he sees as a possible issue is that question. So he changes it to a no without, see, at that point there's some focus. And he changes it without clicking on the instruction. In other words, no further investigation. So could a jury see that as the deliberate avoidance that the ostrich instruction is after?
As a matter of law, I don't believe so, no. It's because at that point, we don't know what's there. We don't know the import of the instruction. So
no, but he's not investigating. He yes was wrong.
Yeah.
Or at least he senses that yes was that was probably the problem.
If you put it within the paradigm of have you actually cut off your curiosity of the will? Have you actually said I'm just going to turn my eye to that? That's not that's being lazy. That's being negligent. That might even be being reckless. But it's not being criminal. It's not saying I'm actually deliberately cutting off my will to not know this.
Well, I mean that's the question in my mind because when he wants the gun. He wants to go hunting. He probably loves to go hunting. Lots of people do. And so he wants, a jury could think he's going to say whatever it takes to be able to buy that gun.
But could a jury say that there is a predicate here, especially when it comes to the second set, to answer Judge Sykes' question, the second set of instructions come at after his signature form. It prints out, and that's where he would have seen it.
Yeah, well, I haven't been talking about that.
Okay, so it's only on that link. And if it's only on that link, that's not enough to say he's so, that all the bells are going off and that everybody would, in their right mind would say, this is being illegal.
After you've already been kicked back when you said yes.
Yes, after you've been kicked back.
That's the problem.
But even in having the problem that he's been kicked back, a normal person says, all right, well, you know what? Every other fact has told me I can have this gun. I've gone to my friend the sheriff. I've gone to the probation officer. I went to Fleet Farm, and they ran me and gave me a hunting license. As he walks in there, and he just goes through his own machinations, what do I have here? I'm sorry, I'm into my time.
I think we have your point. Don't worry. So, Mr. Koenig.
May it please the court, my name is Jonathan Koenig, and I appear on behalf of the United States. Good morning.
The government really undermines its position when it says crazy things like the guy should have gone off and found a lawyer in Berlin, Wisconsin, when he's at Walmart, or accosting the judge in the middle of the street. It really doesn't help your case to say things like that. I think the question is, what's the evidentiary predicate that he was denying knowledge that the statement is false and that a jury could find, based on the evidence of the record, that he had a strong suspicion that it was false and he deliberately avoided the truth?
You may well be right, Your Honor, and I tried to focus in my appeal brief on the actual process that Mr. Perotti encountered at the Walmart. And there were three, by my count, at least three points at which he could have learned more about this issue. The first is when question 11I comes up the first time. And my understanding, it's not entirely clear from the record, but my understanding is that if you move the cursor over that blue line or click on the blue line, you get information on the side of the screen. He says he didn't do that.
That's what the screenshots looked like.
I believe that's...
So not following instructions is deliberate, willful avoidance.
Well,
a lot of people don't follow instructions.
I think three times in a row, yes, Your Honor, respectfully, because he's, of course, kicked back by the computer, and he has another opportunity to do this, and he says he doesn't. Now, that's from his testimony. And then there's the written version of the form where he certifies that he's read everything, including the instructions.
Of course, that's microscopic. No, nobody in reality reads those things, right?
Well, my point is just, if someone had waved this form under his nose and said, here, sign this, that would be a much more plausible argument. But this is a person who's gone through these two steps leading up to that.
So the question is pretty straightforward. It's just, have you ever been convicted in any court of a misdemeanor crime of domestic violence? click to see instructions for question 11.I. So it's not a confusingly worded question.
No, not at all. And as I say, there are at least these three sort of inflection points in the process where he could have learned more, but he decided not to.
No, I think if you have a case, it's because he answers yes. His first instinct when he reads that is to answer yes, because he was convicted of a misdemeanor crime, and it involved domestic violence. Now, law has all sorts of technical definitions. Maybe this was or wasn't, depending, but his first idea is yes. And then when he goes back to change it to no, he knows he's changing it in the context of this topic, and he doesn't change it with any clarification. And so the question is that enough of an evidentiary predicate to show the strong suspicion that a no would be false?
It's also the only answer in Section A that he changes, Your Honor, which I think is significant. He knows there's a problem, or at least the jury could infer that he knows there's a problem. But of course, the flip-flop in the answers is evidence of actual knowledge. We also had these warnings that he received from the state of Wisconsin, including one less than a year before he's sitting in the Walmart. You can't possess a firearm under federal law if you're convicted of a misdemeanor crime of domestic violence. So there's also that backdrop against...
He gets that in conjunction with his conviction, right?
Yes.
When he's released from probation.
Right, but his probation agent has told him the opposite.
So he's
and
getting...
And so did the local sheriff.
Absolutely getting mixed signals from the state of Wisconsin...
Right. I mean, so the ostrich instruction and the whole idea of deliberate avoidance, you know, is properly characterized, I think, in the doctrine as being premised on this issue of deliberately maintaining plausible deniability. We hear that in politics a lot, but you know, that's the basic concept as a way of proving knowledge in this situation, where the defendant went out of his way to preserve plausible deniability so that he would have a defense against the knowledge or mens rea element of the crime. And the government's whole case here hinges on the computer spitting back his answer, I think. I mean, we've kind of zeroed in on that here. Mm-hmm. Is that enough to get this instruction? Because this is what the whole case turned on. This is, I mean, the harmless error, I think, is just off the table here. This is the crux, the whole core of the case. Whether that the fact that the computer kicked back his answer is enough to support the ostrich instruction.
It was, Your Honor, from the government's perspective. Mr. Perotti liked the sort of offhand answer he was getting from his friend, the sheriff, and the probation officer, and he didn't want to confront anything that's going to change his mind about that. That's deliberate
avoidance. Well, he wouldn't have had any reason to think they were wrong. Why would he have thought that he was getting a bum steer from the probation officer?
Well, you know, the other point, and I didn't emphasize his failure to consult a lawyer because it didn't seem to me to be the most important part of this, but nothing says you have to complete this process. If you are really confused about something, you can walk away.
This is a criminal prosecution. I mean, that seems to put the burden on the defendant.
Well, right. And
the burden is on the government to prove that he knowingly filed a false application.
And we would argue, in light of all the evidence, including the prior warnings, the kiosk process...
That's a sufficiency issue. We're not in the whether the evidence is sufficient to support the conviction. We're asking about the factual predicate for giving this instruction, whether that sole fact that the computer kicked back the answer is enough to support the instruction here. I don't think anything else does.
Well, but there's also his failure to read the form. He certifies that he's read the form and the instructions. You can brush that off if you want, but when you're buying a firearm, it's kind of a big deal. And that's the point of these prosecutions, whether they result in a probationary sentence or whether they're the case of the century.
We do hold people to fine print in contract cases. I'll give you that.
I guess I'll just wind up, Your Honor, by agreeing with what you said earlier, which is that this is about the standard of review. And I would direct you to the court's decision in Ramirez, which said, we acknowledge that distinguishing between deliberate avoidance and simple lack of mental effort, lack of curiosity, ordinary ignorance, or mere negligence often involves close calls. And when there's a close call, it's not an abuse of discretion.
Well, but much of what the district court included in the evidentiary calculus at the government's invitation was improperly considered. You know, the not consulting a lawyer, the not consulting the judge, etc.
Well, again, I hadn't...
So to evaluate the abuse of discretion calculus, we have to take all that off the table if that was not properly in the mix as evidentiary support.
I still think, you know, that there are so many cases from this court cautioning against giving this instruction too freely, and I acknowledge that. But at the end of the day, it is an abuse of discretion standard. And the judge made a judgment call here and decided that the instruction was appropriate. There certainly was evidence of both actual knowledge and head in the sand hiding. Whether it was sufficient will be up for the court to decide. We think it was, and we would ask you to affirm. Are there any other questions that I could answer for the panel?
Apparently not. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I think your time expired, Mr. Bugney, so we will take this case under advisement, and we thank both of you, and the court will stand in recess.